KUJZ is 95.3 The Score.
I hope you're ready. It's that time.
This is going to be cool.
Climb aboard for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
A day that will live in sports radio infamy.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
We're talking the big deal, the real deal.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
I am not only drinking the Kool-Aid, I'm the manufacturer.
I am losing my mind.
Tannen, it might be semi-circle time.
Hi, I'm Steve, and, well, I brought a list.
Ben Mann, a guy with tons and tons of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Yeah, to go, what the hell are we doing?
It's Steve Tannen.
All right. Welcome to Sports Talk, the Tuesday edition. As we've been saying, welcome to today. Each day is assigned one of seven, yet they are very blendy, kind of like a this time of our lives smoothie, where they all kind of mixed in together. Occasionally you go, oh, that tastes a little bit like Tuesday. That tastes a little bit like Friday. I didn't know we could still differentiate. Either way, we welcome to the program. It is April 7th, 2020. Would have been the day after we crowned a national champion in men's basketball. It would have been 2 days now before the start of the 2020 Masters, with Tiger defending his title. We'd be into the first full week of Major League Baseball. We'd be thinking about the NFL draft and where it was going to be held and all the hoopla that surrounded that. And, you probably, for some of us, would have been checking out some horse racing this week as they run the various prep races to get us ready for the first Saturday in May, which is the Kentucky Derby. It would have been a really busy time of year in sports. Instead, we are answering questions via the text line that by the way, I'm looking back through some texts, and you get March 19th. Any information on the Ducks spring game? I assume it will be canceled. Yeah, that would be accurate. Going back to questions about Dick Harder on March 10th. Let me tell you something. It's times like this that I love the fact, the way the text line that comes to my laptop, as opposed to, the one on my phone where I clean it out yet, just the level of conversation and just how it turned. And you go to the middle of March. The one text I got is, what should be the level of concern about coronavirus taking over the sports world? That is March 11th. Could I retroactively answer that with, yeah, how about really? It's going to not take it over. It's going to shut it down. There you go. Somebody texted me on January 3rd at 5:30. Hey, really enjoying your pregame women's basketball radio show with Bev. Good for you and for listeners. Congratulations to all. It's just, this was this year, this calendar year, just talking about all this stuff and just how things turn, not necessarily on a dime. Yeah, and whoever just texted that Tuesdays don't have a feel, yeah, that's a great Kramerism. But at the bottom of the hour, we'll have a conversation with Tyson Alger of the Athletic. And he's put out a couple of what I would call real fun content pieces in each of the last 2 weeks. Tail end of last week, he kind of piecemealed together. He put together a bracket of the top eight Duck football teams of all time, and then he played it out and crowned a champ. And today he took an Oregon Duck football fan survey, and on a scale of 1 to 5, with, you know, 1 low and 5 excellent, asked questions about the head coach, the state of the program, and just some real what we're looking for, ways to kind of be distracted, focus on, talk about something that people are passionate about. So we'll get that, as well as his feelings on the decision by the program to bring in an experienced quarterback from Boston College to either compete or start over Tyler Shuck. So that'll be at the bottom of the hour at 5:30. We'll replay. We're going to do this a few times a week because we've been fortunate enough. Well, I should say I've been fortunate enough over the many years I've been doing this to have some magnificent guests. Yesterday we replayed from the pre-Sweet 16 matchup between Duke and Oregon, Bob Harris, the legendary play-by-play man for the Blue Devils. And today it'll be one of two conversations we had that season in 2014. I think the exact date was September 5th, 2014. Then working for the Pac-12 Network, we had a chance to talk to college and pro football Hall of Famer Ronnie Lott. So we'll replay that one. And, you know, if you think back to 2014, it was Coach Helf's second season as the head coach. It was Mariota's third and final season as the quarterback. They had started the year against South Dakota, hanging 62 on him. And it was the Friday before the big Michigan State game. So, yeah. And like I said, I do not, as a rule, go back and re-listen to interviews. I might go back in when it's timely and try and pull a sound bite for like the next day's show or something or other. You know, I know a lot of you record Oregon games and you keep them in their queue or whatever your favorite team is. And I've heard some of you text, you know, I'm watching Oregon and Oregon State from 2015 or whenever it is or ever how long ago. I record every Oregon basketball game and football game, both men and women, just in case in the course of, you know, doing the show, I want to go back and say, you know, on that 3rd and 8, there was an incompletion. Did the receiver run the wrong route? And very rarely, like maybe one game a season, I'll go back. Because, you know, as I'm watching it in real time, I'll jot the time down and, you know, I take good notes. And you could go back on most sports sites and just, you know, go to play-by-play and see what the down and distance was or whatever the pertinent information was. So we'll have that. Also in the 5 o'clock hour, Nick and I will do one of our baseball history segments where we'll put together our all-time best, no faves here, starting five. By the way, I threw ESPN on, and they're playing the game where Cal Ripken broke Lou Gehrig's record for consecutive games played, 21-31. And it's weird to just look out there and see Mike Mussina on the hill. As the starter, Rip would hit a home run in this game. And, yeah, this season would be the 25th anniversary of his breaking that record. And did Mussina get elected to the Hall of Fame? I don't really think he should have. But this was taking place in September. So, yeah, but yeah, he had a nice career. Was there any, if you're a baseball fan, was there ever a time where you thought, well, he's one of the best, if I had to do a current day five-man rotation, would I put Mussina in there? Well, I guess he got voted in last year in 2019, 326 of 425 ballots. You know, you look at the one-loss record, 270 and 153. That's not bad, 64%. Career ERA of 3.7, but obviously, you know, pitched during the teeth of the steroid era. He doesn't have a bunch of bold, which means leading the league in. He never won 20 games, though in 95 this year, ironically, nobody won 20, so he was one of the league leaders with 19. He once led in games started. In 95, he led in shutouts. He led in innings pitched once. His last year with the Big Bad Birds from Baltimore, with which was 2000. I mean, yeah, from 95 through and including 2003, nine straight years through at least 200 innings. He was never a big-time strikeout guy. I mean, he had good stuff, 2,800 Ks over his 3,500 innings. So, you know, you're not talking Verlander or anything like that. But did not win a Cy Young. He was second once, top five. A couple other times, the closest he came was 1999 when he was runner-up. When and by the way, this is a runner-up where you can't even see the first. This is Secretariat. He was Sanhedrin or Run Dusty Run to Secretariat in the Belmont. That was the year Pedro Martinez went 23-4 with a 2.7 ERA and 313 strikeouts in 213 innings. Mussina was the runner-up. Pedro was a unanimous decision. Just beat out Rivera for third. And a guy for Cleveland, the big sexy, Bartolo Colon, was fourth in the Cy Young balloting. Yeah, you know, you go back to Roberto Hernandez, Aaron Seeley, then with Texas before he moved to Seattle. Jamie Moyer was top 10 in the National that year. Randy Johnson and then Mike Hampton had that big year, suckered the Mets into a really big deal, had like a good year, and then bye-bye. Yeah, look at some of the National League Cy Young candidates who got votes that year back in 99. Billy Wagner of Houston, Jose Lima, Kevin Millwood, Kevin Brown, and Trevor Hoffman. Getting votes, by the way, that year, Freddie Garcia, who was also the runner-up to Carlos Beltran as the American League Rookie of the Year. The same year, Scott Williamson won it for Cincinnati. Man, you look at the guys who were in Rookie of the Year for the NL that year, this was not a who's who. Scott Williamson, Preston Wilson of Florida, Warren Morris, Joe McEwing of the Cardinals, and Chris Benson of Pittsburgh, whose wife Anna would turn out to be quite the piece of work. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. So, I was thinking about a conversation that we had early last week where we were kind of mixing and matching teams from different generations. And it dawned on me that in back-to-back years, we had kind of historic football teams for those programs right here in our backyard. You know, the greatest Oregon State team ever was the 2001 Fiesta Bowl champion from the 2000 season when they busted up Notre Dame. Then you had the 2001 Ducks in the 2002 Fiesta Bowl, at the time the greatest Oregon team ever, who tagged their memorable season with a convincing Fiesta Bowl win over Colorado. I think that Oregon State team in 2000, if they had beaten Washington and run the table, remember they only lost by 3 points, I think they would have had a really good chance of beating Oklahoma, who actually ended up winning the thing in the Orange Bowl 13-2 against Chris Wanky and Florida State. Their only loss was in early October at Washington against a very good, as a matter of fact, the last Washington team to win a major, the 2001 Rose Bowl. And it was a 3-point game and came down to a field goal at the very end. And, of course, the 2000 Beavs tormented the Ducks and cost them a perfect conference season in the Civil War with, Joey Harrington had the 5 interceptions. They entered the 2000 – I was looking back. They entered the 2000 Civil War on a 5-game roll. I mean, this was before – offenses were going up-tempo and scoring 50 points regularly. They were, ran it a lot. They were averaging over that 5 games, 38 points a game, which for an offense in 2000 was a bunch. They were 16th in points scored nationally, 10th best in points allowed. I mean, they were good. Kenny Simonton had almost 1,600 yards, 19 rushing TDs. They had Chad Johnson, TJ Houshmandzadeh, and during a really strong run of tight ends, Robert Moorer, Jonathan Smith, the current coach, a gunslinger. But man, that defense with those two terrorizing ends, DeLawrence Grant, Ladarius Jackson, just a wrecking crew, spent forever in the backfield, just devouring quarterbacks. They had two good NFL linebackers, Richard Siegler, Nick Barnett, Dwan Edwards on the defensive line. Their secondary was good. Dennis Weathersby, Terrence Carroll, Keith Hayward Johnson, and, Jake Kukus, who had the 3 picks in that Civil War game. But that fictional game, there were some changes. I mean, the 2001 Ducks would add Ontario Smith, which is huge to see. I mean, he was a 1,000-yard guy, a legit number one option, and, of course, the legendary performance at Washington State where he rushed for 285. They also added George Reister, but the 2001 team had such high expectations because so many stayed and had big senior years like Wes Mallard, Steve Smith, Rashad Bowman, the two corners, Joey Justin Peel, Maurice Morris, a deep, talented offensive line, Ryan Schmid, Corey Chambers, Dan Weaver, Adam Snyder, Jim Adams. If I recall, Dan Weaver was the first one because it was still pretty new to get the – I remember where we sat right behind the Duck bench, second section 11, and Weaver, the center, you would see the big O, the big green O tattoo. I just remember him being the first one to have one that was that visible. And, obviously it depended which way they were going, but if they were coming – in front of us moving left to right, and he was snapping the ball with quarterbacks under center, who'd have thunk it? It was always very visible. Igor Olshansky, Zach Frater, Junior Siavee, Chris Tedderton, whose dad I've run into many times over the year, and Robbie Valenzuela. I mean, those were two really good teams. And, Oregon got the better of them in 2001, but it wasn't the same 2000 team of Oregon State. Oregon State got the better of the Ducks in 2000, but it wasn't exactly the same team. A lot of similarities, but I don't have to tell you that when you have a team with a lot of great sophomores and juniors like the Ducks did in 2000 that all stayed around and became major contributors then as seniors and juniors, I mean, that level of cohesion and obviously incredibly well coached on both sides of the ball with Jeff Tedford, who was in 2001, would be his last year before taking the Cal gig. And, Nick Aliotti had returned to become the defensive coordinator. And, they for eternity, the computers screwed them out of their shot at that unbelievable 2001 Miami team. So I realize where we sit and where your loyalty is, but that 2000 Oregon State team against the 2001 Oregon team, I'll tell you what, that's an even game. That's pick 'em. Where you play in that game, you're going to have physical nature. There's going to be the natural sports hate. You're going to have some great running backs, tight ends, two really strong offensive lines, an OSU defensive line that just got after the quarterback. I mean, I just have visions of those two unbelievable linemen. And I was just trying to think, DeLawrence Grant, Ladarius Jackson, neither did really much in the NFL. I think one was with the Raiders, right? DeLawrence Grant went in the 01 draft, yeah, to Oakland in the third round. And in 2002, the Raiders Super Bowl year, he started 14 games. That was the best season he had. As for Ladarius, I don't remember if he got an NFL shot or if he was invited to a camp. I don't recall. But anyway, it would have been a hell of a ball game. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Somebody said the 85 Bears and the 01 Rams. I think you might mean the 85 Bears and the 99 Rams, the greatest show on turf that actually won the Super Bowl. But man, yeah, one of the greatest offenses ever, and arguably the greatest defense ever. So yeah, if you got any suggestions, I've actually had a lot of fun with that, just kind of going back and looking over the personnel and then trying to kind of piecemeal together what might happen as, unless any of you have come across Doc Brown, his DeLorean, a flux capacitor, and some plutonium, we're probably not going to be able to go back in time unless you know if there's any lightning due to strike any clock towers around here. I don't even know if there's a clock tower in Eugene, maybe downtown. All right, before we break, I want to give a shout-out to our friends at Josh Cooley Real Estate Team, the official real estate team of the Oregon Ducks, who are now back in the fold. And you've heard me for probably a better part of a year now talking at the Enclave. And you can go to EugeneEnclave.com, and they have these virtual tours of these homes that are incredible. And they're great because while obviously they sell local, people from outside the market who are thinking about either relocating, maybe the jobs, who's just decided that they, want to get out of the hectic nature of the city and just have heard great things about the quality of life in Eugene. But man, I went online and I was looking at some of them, and it's just fantastic. I mean, these homes feature four floor plans that are ready for occupancy now. They're clean, they're safe, they're vacant, they're ready for showings. And like I said, you could take these 3D tours. The technology is fantastic. And like Josh said, they sell about 50% of their homes to out-of-state buyers. So again, check it out. We appreciate Josh Cooley and his A-plus real estate team. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll have an update, and we'll talk with Tyson Alger of The Athletic. Talking Duck football next, 95.3 The Score.
95.3 The Score is your home for live sports talk all day, every day. Download the TuneIn app and take 95.3 The Score with you wherever you go.
We've had people talking about starting on Christmas, but if you don't do that, you're starting what? End of October, early November. So when do you plan on finishing to then give them an off season so you don't finish the playoffs and then all of a sudden you go right into the next season? That's why I keep wondering, are there dates in the minds of these commissioners and leagues that say, do we have a drop-dead date? Do we have a date where we say, okay, if we get to this point, nothing's going to happen?
That's Golic on Golic and Wingo talking about something we've talked about. You got to have an end date. Beginning date, that's just going to take care of itself and determine how long or short the season or postseason is. But you got to watch out when you end. High-level athletes need their offseason. All right, 284-8571. Actually, let's lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline as we get Tyson in here in a couple of moments. And, yeah, I was looking up, we're talking about the 2000 Oregon State team, which, wow, can't believe this would be 20 years ago. And Ladarius Jackson actually did get a quick shot with Washington in 2002. He was a reserve. He did not start a game. Actually recorded 2.5 sacks, and he was out of the league. All right, let's lock it down, talk some Duck football with the fine sports journalist for The Athletic. He's found a way to pass couple weeks to provide us with some entertaining content. You can follow along on Twitter. Use the handle at Tyson Alger. Tyson, I can't tell you how much I appreciate the time. How you doing these days?
You know, I'm not doing too bad. You know, fortunately, we've lucked out, and you know, people seem to have at least some sort of interest in some of the zany stuff we've been putting out there. So, I mean, the sun is shining and I have a job, so I am incredibly blessed right now.
Yeah, you're out in front, as they say. So beyond doing some work and some social media postings, as far as keeping sane as these days blend together, what are you doing to remain among the sane?
You know, I've been doing a lot of, like, the Zoom stuff, like, you know, just about everyone else has. Like, I play on a men's league hockey team here in Portland, and we were actually supposed to host a tournament in Portland last week. We were going to have about, like, 30 teams from around the country coming into play, and obviously we had to cancel that. So we've been kind of having, like, a virtual Zoom locker room where it's essentially it's just an excuse for us to sit at our computer and crack a beverage and talk with people. But you know, just connecting with people and you know, trying to get outside a little bit. I mean, the weather's gorgeous today, so I went for a bike ride this morning. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely challenging, but I have enjoyed some of the ways that I think people have been able to connect. Like, I've talked to some friends more this week than I probably have in the last couple of years. So, you know, pros and cons there.
You know, you put something on Twitter I wasn't totally aware of. So you were at the Oregonian prior to becoming the lead football guy, and you covered men's basketball. So you mentioned 2015 Pac-12 tournament, the Joe Young moment. I mean, what do you remember about, I guess, landing that gig and good timing? You know, you followed that program who was about to make a third straight NCAA tournament, which for the Ducks, that was the first time ever.
Yeah, I was so fortunate because I covered high schools for 2 years at the Oregonian from like 2012 to 14, and I got promoted to help out Andrew Greif on football on the Ducks beat right for that 2014 season. So basically, I got my first year covering college football. They went to the national title game, like pretty good timing, I guess. And that was great. And you know, Greif was so cool because like he approached it like, hey, you write whatever story you want, like let's just do the best work together. But I was definitely like the number two on that beat, but basketball was mine, and I was covering that by myself, and that was kind of a crazy year for Oregon because they had those guys suspended the summer prior, and kind of everyone thought they were going to be terrible that year, and they ended up making the NCAA tournament kind of partially because of that Pac-12 tournament run and Joe Young. And I just remember landing in Vegas, and this was like the first big kind of trip that I had done by myself with the Oregonian. And, you know, this is what my dream was. Like, I always wanted to just cover like a major college program for a city newspaper. And so I'm in Vegas, I'm covering games at the MGM Grand. The Ducks are playing Utah in the semifinal. And this is, you know, probably the biggest sporting event that I had ever covered on my own. I mean, obviously the Ducks have been in the national championship game. And at that time, the Oregonian was, had very tight deadlines, just kind of how Clinton's gone over the last, you know, decade or so. Joe Young hits that crazy buzzer beater game winner. You go into the locker rooms, you're doing the interviews, and there's just this feeling that you get, like, especially in open locker rooms where everyone's getting their own stuff, where when you just know you have a good story or maybe a quote that nobody else does or whatnot, and you're like, walk back to your computer and you're just like, oh man, I'm going to kill this story. This is going to be good. And that was one of the first times I had that feeling. And, yeah, it was, Joe had posted the video of that buzzer beater a couple days ago, and it just brought back that memory of like, man, this was like the first time I felt like a legit, like, big city sports writer. And, it kind of took me back a little bit because I think we all get so used to, you know, these games and the travel and everything. And to kind of take me back to that moment of, you know, realizing that I do something really cool and I'm fortunate to do it. I just felt like tweeting that out there.
No, that was awesome. And of course, any Duck fan is like, oh yeah, that's always going to go over big. Talking with Tyson Alger of the Athletic. So I want to get to I'm going to call it your Elite Eight piece. You went through what you consider the top Duck football teams of all time. You seeded them 1 through 8. So I guess, what was the line of thinking in doling out the rankings? Like, what were your variables? Because you didn't simply go by highest ranking or best record.
Right. So I figured my top two seeds were the 2014 team and the 2010 team, and the logic being, well, those were the two teams that played for the national title game. And, you know, if you actually go and look at the stats, like the 2010 team might have actually, you know, had been better on paper. But I gave 2014 the number one seed because, frankly, they had the Heisman winner. So that made things pretty easy there. And then there it just kind of like fell in line after that. So, I mean, 2010 was the obvious number two. And then there was a couple wild cards in there. Like, you know, you threw in the 2007 team that, you know, lost four games, but that's the Dennis Dixon team that, and hypothetically everyone's healthy here. So, you know, how do you see that hypothetically healthy Dennis Dixon team against, like, let's say, I thought the 2012 Oregon team was a really interesting one in there. I think that might be the most talented Oregon team that's ever been assembled. And, you know, they tripped up against Stanford in the middle of the season, losing by a field goal. But, it was a lot of fun to kind of go through there. And, I mean, it was all subjective. I mean, these are my hypothetical rankings. So I just went in there 1 through 8. And, I didn't get too much of an argument with it.
Well, let's face it. We know it's subjective. That doesn't mean people aren't going to say you're wrong. So from the readers.
Well, I haven't shown Aaron Fentress this yet, though. So,
you know, oh, no.
I'm sure he'll tell me it was wrong real quick when we do our next podcast.
Well, that's your podcast right there. So you hear from Twitter followers, your readers, and be it the, like you said, the almost 2007 team drawing a 3 seed, or a lot of people, like you mentioned, think 2012 just loaded, or maybe fans. Where would you say the folks you heard from called you and were like, yeah, I'm not really sure you were right on that team? Was there one particular one who people thought should have been in, or that you overvalued?
So there was one team in there. I believe it was either the 2005 or 2006 Ducks with like Kellen Clemens and Jonathan Stewart. And I don't think necessarily on paper that team was as good or accomplished as much as some of the other 8 teams that I had in there, but, you know, part of the simulation, I thought it would be fun if we had, you know, kind of some teams from distinctive different eras. So, you know, we were able to get like the 2001 Joey Harrington, Mike Bellotti Ducks in there. We were able to get a couple Chip Kelly squads in there. Right. We got a Mark Helfrich one in there. I think that Kellen Clemens team was kind of like the sore thumb one, where everyone was, you know, noted this disrespect to that team. I mean, that team had some legitimately good players. And if you look at like the pro potential from that one, you know, Clemens ended up having like a 13-year NFL career, same with Jonathan Stewart. But I think most people were just kind of felt like that team just didn't quite, look like the other ones.
No, I see what you mean, because, you know, like 07, people felt like they were ticketed for a title and a Heisman. 05 lost to USC and, you know, played in more of a secondary bowl. But let's fast forward, because in the end, you didn't have the top seed advance, and it came down to the only unbeaten regular season and 2012. So what made you decide, yeah, those are the two who are going to play for the title, and who won?
Well, actually, so what we did is we ran them through this simulator site that I found, where it actually, whatifsports.com, it actually takes the stats from each team and gives attributes to it and actually sends it. So
Everything that happened in there was like computer simulation. I didn't actually pick
it. Oh, I thought you in your somewhere in your mind you actually played this whole thing out. All right, that makes better sense.
I actually just did the seedings, and but what was so fun about it though is it like you click. Compute, and it actually gives you like the full box score with the play-by-play and everything. And so, like, I thought it was fun to just kind of take those box scores and write gamers off of them. So, you know, I think the 2012 team beat the 2014 team thanks to a really late Kenyon Barner, like 26-yard touchdown run. You know, Kenyon Barner was good at doing those from time to time. So, yeah, I mean, it was certainly a fun thing, but I wasn't the one that decided the final decisions there.
That's awesome. That's a nice little flavoring to it. And by the way, you can go to Tyson's Twitter feed, at Tyson Alger. Scroll through it. It's some really fun stuff. So today you posted a survey, and I get we're going to get you'll run the numbers and post another story. And again, a nice deep dive, fan satisfaction. But from what you've observed the past 2 years, beyond the poll, what do you get from fans as far as their belief that right now Mario Cristobal is the guy to lead this program to already what he's done and moving forward and upward?
You know, I feel like fans think that Oregon's in a really good spot right now. I mean, you know, you're coming off a year to a Rose Bowl win, a Pac-12 championship. You know, every single offseason, it's a positive story with the way that this team recruits. And I think more importantly than any of that is just I think fans legitimately like Mario. You know, I think he's done a good job of kind of embracing the community and getting himself out there and kind of the way he promotes and sells the program. I think there's a lot of trust and a lot of buy-in there amongst Oregon fans. And some early results from those numbers definitely back that up. And, you know, what's crazy to think about, too, is you know, one of the questions on there was like, who's your favorite Oregon coach of all time? And right now Chip Kelly's kind of running away with that. And if you think about Cristobal, I think a lot of people kind of go like, oh, you know, it's still early. Like, let's give him some time. You know, Chip Kelly was only here for, what was it? Four seasons. I mean, Cristobal is halfway there already. Like it's not like Cristobal's like still early in his tenure as an Oregon football coach compared to some of the other people. So I think that's why I felt like today, I mean, right now was a good time to run that, you know, that and the fact that we have nothing else to write about, just because he's established himself now. He has, you know, a lot of his guys in there. He's made several coaching hires. I think that this is a really good time to just kind of look at the program, you know, especially as they move into a second phase with him without like a Justin Herbert at quarterback.
No, that's a good point. I'm going to be curious to see how all this comes out. But lastly, you mentioned Justin, who's now off to the NFL. The logic seemed like it was going to be Tyler Shuck as the new starter. So now they're bringing in a transfer from Boston College, Anthony Brown. Historically, a guy makes a move like that, you know he's at least in the mix. So I know there's no way to know at this point whether it's a reflection on Shuck or if it's just insurance, but what was your reaction when you heard they made this move?
I loved it. I think it's a absolutely fantastic move for Oregon to make, because if you look at this team, this defense is ready to contend for something major. You know, they were the driving force behind a Rose Bowl winning team last year, and I think the defense is even better than it was. This defense should be even better this year than it was then. And so I think the way you look at this team is you can look at it on one sense of being like, okay, maybe they're 1 or 2 years out, you know, wait for a quarterback to develop. Or you could look at it in this season and be like, hey, if we can get a decent quarterback play this year, like it could be something special. And I don't think this move says that they don't think Tyler Shuck can do that, but one, it's insurance because of injury, and two, you know, it's just insurance in case Shuck doesn't pan out. You know, we've seen a lot of quarterbacks at Oregon that have had hype and potential not quite realize that, and I do think Shuck's the real deal, but this pushes him, and it just gives Oregon a competent, experienced backup, because even if Shuck ran away with that thing this year and Brown didn't come in, you know, if he got hurt, it'd be a true freshman most likely as his backup coming in, and Oregon needs to be able to compete in games where it's not at 100%. I think this just really gives them the depth and you know, extra talent at a much needed position.
All right. Hey, that's a lot of fun stuff, man. We really appreciate you coming on because, as you've mentioned, right now, if you could provide content and entertainment, you're on a pedestal for folks who do a show like this. So he's Tyson Alger of The Athletic on Twitter, at Tyson Alger, A-L-G-E-R. T.A., stay safe, stay well, and thanks a million for joining us, man. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, man, and want to thank you, too. You're keeping us all entertained as well, so keep that.
All right. Thanks a lot, T.A. Have a good one.
All right. Yeah.
All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. That brings us to break time, and we're going to do just that, and we'll be back with the home stretch of the 4 o'clock hour. Sports Talk next, 95.3 The Score.
We're riding the waves of technology just for you. You can call the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline at 284-8571. Text 321-0824. Tweet Steve at SportsTalk953.
And back to throw. Pippen with the ball, get it upfield. He will, and he's going to score. 20, the 10, 5, touchdown, Micah Pittman. Third down and two, Herbert. Leaky on behind him. Snap. To throw, give him five, give him six, into the end zone, no
know.
Touchdown call yet, they're going to put it, yeah, touchdown!
He'll look at it again.
Now the touchdown!
Oh, yeah. Remember late in the third quarter, the Washington game this year, as we welcome you back to Sports Talk, 95.3 The Score. Ducks were down 28-21. And the defense rose up and held the Dogs to a Peyton Henry 30-yard field goal, 10 points. And then Justin drove them right, I think that was the last play, third quarter, Micah Pittman, 36-yarder. Then the Jalen Redd, 5-yarder, like you heard Jerry and Jorgie talking about there, just barely got in. And you know, you think about the Washington State game and the Washington game, and it was like, yeah, the path to the Rose Bowl was interesting. Even though they ended up losing one conference game, it wasn't like those years in 2010 or 2011, 2012, when it just seemed like they were destroying everything in their path. I mean, it was more of a throwback to the 01 team who just, you know, with Captain Comeback, just found a way, as we welcome you back. Sports Talk 95.3, The Score. I'm watching this record-breaking day from September 6, 1995. The Orioles are hosting the then California Angels as Cal Ripken breaks the Iron Horse streak of most consecutive games played. And, you know, you go back and you just look at the starting lineups from 25 years ago. And both of these teams, first of all, the value here beyond just an historic record held by an all-timer, Lou Gehrig, was the previous season was canceled because of the player strike. And they were back late, and there was a real big hit taken by MLB. They always call it the 25% that walked away. They would return mostly due to the 98 fuel-injected home run race, but this really did a lot to kind of ignite people's baseball passions again because, you know, it was Ripken. But you look at that California lineup, and they were a team that was 13 games over 500. The Orioles, not so good. They were sub 500, going nowhere. Tony Phillips, Jim Edmonds, Tim Sockeye Salmon, JT Snow, Garrett Anderson, Damian Easley, the starter in the game, Sean Boesky, and the Orioles with, speaking of juicers, Brady Anderson, Rafael. I did not take steroids, Palmeiro, Bobby Bonilla, on that team, obviously being paid by the Mets. Harold Baines, obviously Ripken, who would hit a homer in that game, a solo homer with Moose on the hill, Mike Mussina. And the guy who closed out the game, the guy who closed out the 86 World Series for the Mets, 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 one Jesse Orozco. So an amazing trip down memory lane. Joe DiMaggio is in the stands. They've been doing some cutaways. Just saw David Robinson, who I think may have been the MVP of the NBA that year. Because 95, obviously, was one of the seasons Michael was off playing baseball with the Birmingham Barons. I don't know, was he 94 MVP or 95 MVP? I have to double check that. But anyway, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. And I should always know to trust myself. Your 1995 NBA MVP, one Admiral David Robinson. So he was at that game. I remember watching it was on ESPN. I think Berman was calling it. And the fact that September will be 25 years. That's pretty amazing. Of course, when you say time flies now, in the midst of these most unique, trying times, as this global pandemic has brought Earth to a halt, and time and days kind of have taken on a new meaning. You know, you look back on that and you think, ah, a simpler time, records being broken. And of course, you know, you're also in the middle, not in the middle, you're at the start. It was probably with the way it works just prior to the beginning of the 95 NFL season, because college usually starts on Labor Day, and then the NFL fires up, and that was the Niners coming off their last Super Bowl win, and with Barry Switzer, the Dallas Cowboys would go on to win all the marbles. And actually, the season did start on September 3rd, and this was September 6th. So I stand corrected. All right, hang tight, everybody. The 5 o'clock hour is next. 95.3, The Score.
What are we talking about, Skip?